In our studio is the author of The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs. Steve, is it Broussat?
Broussati, but
Broussati.
Don't worry too much about
that. Is that Italian? Broussati?
It
There's
is,
an
originally.
E at the end. Broussati.
Yeah. It's gone through lots of iterations and changes over the generations, but it originally was Italian, yep.
You're a paleontologist at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, but you're an Illinois boy, right?
I am. I'm from Ottawa, just a little bit southwest of us here in Chicago now. So down in the Starved Rock area on the Illinois River, that's where I grew up and really have lived most of my life until I went off to study paleontology, which I studied here at the University of Chicago, and then I've started traveling around the world. And
what high school did you go to?
I went to Ottawa Township High School, right on the banks of the river in Ottawa, on the banks of both rivers where the Illinois meets the Fox.
Do you have a Hall of Fame at your school?
We do.
And are you on it?
I am. I don't know what that says about me or what that says about the school.
I think it says good things about both. But I'm just fascinated. You know, I told you off the air, I was a little bit of a geologist, lapidarius, fossil collector when I was a kid. I used to be fascinated by these things. I love these things. And so there you were as a kid kind of bumping around the riverbanks maybe in Ottawa, looking at rocks and stuff like that?
Yeah, like we were saying, it's a tough thing for people like us that grow up around here in the Chicago area or in the suburbs to collect rocks and fossils because there's just not a lot out there.
We would go to the quarries.
Yeah, so there's Thornton Quarry around here, which I think is still open. That's a great fossil site. There's a few quarries down Ottawa Way, which I would go to when I was in high school. I was a very, very popular kid in high school, hanging out at the quarries, not drinking beer or anything, but collecting rocks.
I know a couple people from Ottawa out there, and they actually go on fossil walks still. Like to have a team of people walking through fields and things looking for fossils.
Yeah, that thing happens. That sort of thing happens quite a bit. And especially for arrowheads and Native American artifacts, there's still a lot of collecting there. And there's a very famous fossil site around the Chicago area. It's more down by Coal City and Braidwood and Wilmington, this place called Mazan Creek. And some of the most famous fossils from anywhere in the world from about 300 some million years ago can be found there. Long before the dinosaurs, though. Those things are much older than the dinosaurs, and so I collected there when I was a kid as well.
I mean, how far down do you have to dig to find a fossil?
It really just depends where you are. Some places you don't have to dig at all, really. You have rocks sticking up, poking up out of the surface, and you can
Sioux
just walk
Sioux was found
around.
That way, as I recall.
That's right. So Sioux at the Field Museum, which, of course, is just being remounted, a new exhibit that Sioux will be the centerpiece of. Sioux was collected about 20 years ago, actually more than that now, about 30 years ago, out in South Dakota. And that's in the Badlands out there. It's an amazing place to find fossils because you have rocks everywhere and you don't have that many people. You don't have that many roads or that many buildings covering up the rocks. And you can walk around and look for little fragments of bone sticking out of the rocks. And maybe, if you're lucky, you'll find a complete T-Rex like Sue Hendrickson did when she discovered that.
But if we, like, but to Violetta's point, if wherever someone's listening to us right now, if they worked hard at it or went deep enough, eventually would they find some fossils?
It depends where you are. You probably would find some fossils eventually, but maybe not dinosaurs. And so in the state of Illinois, nobody's ever found a dinosaur. Not a single bone, not a single tooth, not a single piece of a toe or anything. And that's just because there's not really the right types of rocks here to find dinosaurs. Rocks of the right age and the right type.
But when we say that, you go to the museum and they go, look at this, there's a T-Rex or a Brontosaurus or whatever, and see the bones. Most of what you see aren't the bones. Those are plaster casts of what they think the bones were like. We really don't have a complete dinosaur or many of them anyway, do we?
Sometimes museums do put these casts on display, but a lot of times museums put the original bones on display. So Sioux at the Field Museum, those are the original bones.
The whole thing?
Almost the entire thing, about 90% is
really
original. So sometimes you do find dinosaur skeletons that are complete or almost complete.
Okay, so zillions and zillions of years on Earth here. give me the elevator speech about the rise of dinosaurs.
The dinosaur origin story. Okay, so we're used to animals like T-Rex and Brontosaurus. I think that's what we think of when most of us think of dinosaurs. We go to a museum like the Field Museum. We see those amazing animals on display. But that's not how dinosaurs started out. It took dinosaurs a long time to get that way. And the very first dinosaurs were running around about 250 million years ago on a supercontinent. All of the land was connected together. Supercontinent of Pangaea.
And then a super ocean, too.
And a super ocean.
It's fascinating to think of as well.
Yep, an ocean that surrounded that giant slab of land. And somewhere in the middle of that continent, you had the first dinosaurs arising, but they were small. They were only about the size of house cats. They walked on all four legs. They had these long, spindly, gangly limbs. They could run really fast, but there weren't a whole lot of them. There were very few of them. They were very rare, and they were living in the shadow of other types of animals, early relatives of crocodiles that were at the top of the food chain at that time, car-sized salamanders that ruled the rivers and the lakes. So it was a very humble origin for these dinosaurs, and it took them about 50 million years of slow diversification, slow evolution, as that continent started to break apart. 50-some million years until they became big, until they spread around the world, until they became things like T-Rex and Brontosaurus.
So was there a place and a time where there was a Brontosaurus here and a Tyrannosaurus there and all of these magnificent, gigantic creatures all eating each other and eating the plants? I mean, that's the scene I have in my head. I know there were no cavemen there, but were they all kind of in the same place at the same time?
Dinosaurs really were an empire, and that empire lasted for over 150 million years. So throughout that time, there were different dinosaurs living in different places. So some of these dinosaurs that we all know did live together. T-Rex did live with Triceratops. T-Rex did fight Triceratops. T-Rex did eat Triceratops. We know that from fossils of Triceratops with bite marks that match the teeth of T-Rex. But other dinosaurs would have never seen each other, and here's a crazy factoid for you, and maybe this will come in handy one day in a pub quiz or a Trivial Pursuit or something. But T-Rex is closer in time to us than it was to Brontosaurus or Stegosaurus. So
T-Rex did not live at the same time as the Brontosaurus?
No, it didn't, and it's closer in time to us. So T-Rex
Brontosaurus
lived,
is the big Fred Flintstone one, right?
That's right, the one that Fred Flintstone rode into work every day. That's Brontosaurus, long neck, tiny head, big pot belly.
They did not live at the same time.
They did not. So Brontosaurus lived about 150 million years ago. T-Rex lived about 66 million years ago, and then, of course, we're here today. So T-Rex is closer to us.
I am going to use that. No one's going to ask. I'm just going to stop strangers on the street and go, hi, you don't know me. I do a talk show. Did you know that? Who reigned the longest?
That's a good question and a tough question, because it's hard to tell sometimes, because a lot of dinosaurs, we only have one fossil. Sometimes we only have a few bones. So it's hard to really get the statistics for each one. But if we think about groups of dinosaurs, we can say that the group of meat eaters, what we call the theropod dinosaurs, that group that includes T-Rex and Velociraptor, that group was around from the beginning. And so that is one example of a dinosaur group.
How many years would that be then?
That would have been going all the way back to at least 250 million years ago, all the way till the end of the time of dinosaurs, when that asteroid came down about 66 million years ago.
So you're looking at 140, 160 million years.
Yeah,
maybe.
You're looking, maybe even getting close to 200 million years, depending on the age of.
Can you
fossils.
Imagine? I mean, so how long has mankind been on the earth? How long have apes or Homo erectus or any
Not
of
long.
Our ancestors? I mean, so that
long.
Was one of the things that stunned me in your book, to think that the Earth would support life for that long, and a specific kind of life for that long, that continually. I mean, what a run, huh?
It was, and in the book, in The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, that's the story that I try to tell, is that story of dinosaur history, that full story from the origin story, like we just talked about, those first humble dinosaurs emerging on that supercontinent, and then telling that tale of how they spread around the world, and how some of them became the size of jumbo jets, and how other ones became T-Rexes, and other ones turned into birds, and then how the rest of them died.
So what would have happened if the meteor never hit the Earth?
I was scaring everybody because I was reading from your book about the day. What did you call it? The worst day in Earth's history? Here it is. It was the worst day in the history of our planet. A few hours of unimaginable violence that undid more than 150 million years of evolution. Wow. Okay, that's one way to put it. And then you go on to describe what that was like, the glass raining from the sky, the incredible heat and stuff like that. But if that's a good question. What if that didn't happen?
I think we can let our imaginations run wild, and it's a whole lot of fun. It's
Would we have evolved?
Probably not, because the very first mammals got started right alongside the very first dinosaurs back on that supercontinent more than 230 million years ago. But those groups went their separate ways. Dinosaurs spread around the world. They became huge. They became dominant. Mammals stayed in the shadows. Mammals remained small, and they were good at being small. But then when the dinosaurs died out, when that asteroid came down and caused that worst day in the history of Earth, then the mammals almost immediately took over from the dinosaurs. They were able to survive, and within most a few tens or hundreds of thousands of years, you have mammals that are the size of cows, mammals the size of giraffes, saber-toothed flesh eaters, burrowing mammals, tree-climbing mammals, even the very first primate. So it looks like that asteroid knocking off the dinosaurs was the trigger that allowed our ancestors to stake their claim.
But why would our ancestors survive and the dinosaurs the most powerful not?
This is one of the lessons of these big extinction events where climates and environments change really quickly. And there's a few of these in the history of life, and fossils are the evidence that tell us about these things. And what we often see is that when there is really sudden change, those animals that are the dominant ones, the ones that are at the top of the food chain, the ones that are the most successful, they often die out because they are well adapted to a certain world, a certain type of climate, and then they can't cope when things change. And oftentimes it's the small animals, the ones that can hide, that can burrow, that can fly, the ones that can eat lots of different types of foods, you know, the subway rats, the cockroaches, the pigeons.
Yeah.
Those kind of animals have a better chance to make it through, and then they might take over the world afterwards.
So describe the violence on Earth when the asteroid hit.
This probably was, without hyperbole, the worst day in the history of Earth, because what happened that day was a 6-mile-wide asteroid fell out of the sky. And this was a rock that was traveling faster than a speeding bullet. It smashed into the Earth with the force of over 1 billion nuclear bombs, and it punched a hole in the crust that was over 100 miles wide. And that left a crater that is down in Mexico, near Cancun. That's where the crater is. Most of it is covered with water, so you can't see it, you know, if you're down there on vacation.
For a long time, we wondered, where was the evidence
That's
of that?
Right.
Well, it's underwater. Oh,
that's right.
Think about that.
Absolutely. So that cause, when that asteroid hit the Earth and made that crater and released all that energy, it unleashed instantaneously a cascade of wildfires, of tsunamis, of earthquakes, of hurricane-force winds, of dust being shot up into the atmosphere.
You said the winds hit 600 miles an hour.
Yeah, it would have been winds that were more severe, nastier than really any hurricane humans have ever experienced. And the earthquakes would have been worse than any humans have ever experienced. So this was a terrible day, but it wasn't a normal day. This was the biggest asteroid that's hit the Earth in the last 500 million years at least. So we shouldn't be worried that this is going to happen tomorrow.
Okay, because Elif has this question. Go ahead, Elif.
I was just about to ask, what are the chances of us facing the same?
I've got everybody paranoid around here because I've been describing the worst day, and even the second worst day would be a bad day if something like this happened. And frankly, I do lose sleep at night going, all we got right now is Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck to save us. We've got no hope that if another one of these... I mean, really, you think, oh, no, that's a phenomena exclusive to the time of the dinosaurs. Yeah. But it's not timed that way. Those are independent events. An asteroid could hit the Earth today when we have Starbucks. Am I right?
It could. Maybe Trump's Space Force will protect us. I don't know. But asteroids like this, look, we have a pretty good idea of where they are. There are so many astronomers around the world that keep close tabs on these things.
We've had ones pass between us and the moon that we didn't see coming.
Yep, that's right. They haven't
the size
been 6 miles wide.
I know, they weren't
yeah.
that big. But, I mean, some of them could, they could cause a forest fire, some of these things.
They could. And I think, you know, we shouldn't lose sight of asteroids, but I think we should be more focused on the changes that are happening on our Earth today, the climates and the environments that are changing so quickly. And these are things that could cause us serious trouble, but we also have the power to stop.
The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, Steve Briscati's book. Yeah, that's the Briscati from Ottawa, Illinois. is in our, did I say it right? Bruschetta?
Yeah, it's good.
Bruschetta, biscotti.
You know, delicious, right?
Yeah. This book is delicious. This book is,
thank you.
It is fantastic. And it's on, and this is the only book I think that isn't about Donald Trump that is on the New York Times bestseller list. And it's there for a reason. It is great science, but I mean, he doesn't compromise that. He doesn't water that down, but it's a page turner.
Well, I think it puts things in perspective, too.
I think it does in a lot of ways. Okay, so a lot of text questions about that coming up. In our studio is Steve Brusati. He is the author of The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs. I like that in the New York Times book review section, they pointed a number of books that kind of talk about evolution and earth science, and you're at a good place in a good time. I wonder sometimes, is that coordinated? Why this book and why now? What brought you to this today?
Well, the reason I wanted to write this book is because there are lots of books about dinosaurs for kids. You could go to any library or any bookshop. You might see hundreds of books for kids, but very few books for adults. And that just struck me as kind of weird because movies about dinosaurs are a big deal. Look at how much money the latest Jurassic Park movies made this summer. And there's all these television shows about dinosaurs, but there just didn't seem to be anything recent for adults. And that's what I tried to do, a pop science book that tells that story of dinosaurs to a broad audience and to try to get adults enthused about science.
Dissuade me of a myth that maybe a lot of people cling to about dinosaurs.
Well, there's quite a lot of myths out there, but I think the biggest thing I'll say, and one of the things I try to articulate in the book, is even when I was in school, which is in the late 80s and throughout the 90s, when we learned about dinosaurs in school, we were still taught that they were these drab-colored, dim-witted, slow-moving idiots of prehistory, basically, these wastes of space that were just sitting around waiting to go extinct. But we now know that's not the case at all. These were nature's ultimate success stories. They had this empire for over 150 million years. Some of them were really, really smart. They had huge brains and keen senses. We know that from CAT scanning their fossil skulls. Some could move really fast. Some could grow really fast. Some could even fly. So I think that image of dinosaurs, though, still persists, that outdated image, and I hope the book can do a little bit.
Were they social creatures?
Some of them were. Some of them were very social, and we know that from fossils, too. We have some fossil sites. We call these things bone beds, but that's essentially just a term for a mass graveyard. And there are some of these places where there are thousands of skeletons of the same type of dinosaur buried together, a sign of a herd that was probably overcome by a flood or some kind of catastrophe. So they would have had very complex social lives.
John, fascinating interview, but where did the first dinosaurs come from in the first place? And maybe place is the wrong word, because weren't some of them evolving at a time when, like we say, okay, there's one in Iowa, but really Iowa wasn't Iowa when they were there anyway, right?
Yep, that's right. That's right. I'm sure there were some fantastic dinosaurs in Iowa and in Illinois.
No, but really, I mean, like the continent didn't even look like
right.
It looks now.
Yeah, the boundaries, these state boundaries and national boundaries, all these things here today didn't mean anything back then. And when all the land was together as one continent, there were basically no boundaries.
You could walk from the North Pole to the South Pole.
You could walk the entire length of the earth back then. But the thing that could do you in was there were different climates in different parts of that continent. And so right in the middle of that supercontinent was a huge desert. You were 10,000 miles from the coast.
10,000 miles. And so what was the atmosphere? We got to go. But what was the environment like? Was it super humid? I think of the dinosaurs living in Miami-like weather.
It was, in general, the earth was much hotter back then. There were no ice caps on the poles. Sea levels were higher.
Could I have survived it, though? Would humans have been able to put up with it?
I think we could have, especially if we evolved in that world. We would have become adapted to it. I have no doubt.
Yeah. What a pleasure to meet you. Congratulations. And I presume you'll write another book about the...
Well, you know, we'll see what comes next. But I guess the most immediate thing is I'll be in Winnetka tonight.
Yes.
I know we got to get the plug out to the book stall. So 6:30 tonight in Winnetka, I'll be there talking about the book, doing a little reading. And it's a family-friendly event. So if anybody, particularly in the north suburbs in the city, is interested in any of this stuff I'm talking about, come and see us in Winnetka tonight.
I know a lot of you are. The book stall in Winnetka. Probably, what, 7 o'clock tonight?
It's 6:30 is when it's going to kick off.
Funny thing is, he's going to speak for 5 million years, which is kind of a dinosaur joke. It's nice to meet you. Congratulations.
Thank you, John.
The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs.